We are back with another episode of the Disciple Making Leader podcast. I'm your host today, Executive Director of Disciple First, Ben Borgman. And we're just an organization that really is passionate about the local church and making disciples. And ultimately, we exist to help you make and multiply disciples like Jesus. We're going to have a fun time today in the podcast room, aren't we, Craig?
I've been looking forward to this one. It's going to be great.
Yeah, we've got Craig Etheridge here in the studio.
Brother, good to see you again, Brother Ben.
Yeah. And a special guest. This is a first-timer over here to my right. First time in the podcast studio.
I've never done a podcast, to be honest. I don't even know what to do with my hands.
Yeah, well, Ricky Bobby action. I don't know. They keep creeping up.
Do I just stand here? Do I sit? I don't know. Yeah. First time.
Yeah, so
you can clutch your fresh Topo Chico.
Yeah, that's a nice.
This is an inaugural gift that we give to you because it's your first time. We just want you to feel welcome.
Thank you.
You know, I was in a restaurant. I went to California with my father-in-law and his wife and my wife a couple weeks ago, and we went to eat lunch, and I saw Ricky Bobby's mom. Oh. Jane Lynch was in there eating. I was like, as soon as I saw her, I was like, there's Ricky Bobby's mom right there. Right there in real life. So anyway, so we've got Gibson Largent with us today. Thank you, Gib, for joining us today, Gibson. Excited. There's nothing intimidating about a podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
Except for the cameras, except for we're going to ask you a lot of very deep
questions. And don't mess up because it's all recorded.
Yeah, and we don't do any editing. So whatever you say.
Whatever you say, it's there.
Yeah, just don't quote me on anything. Yeah.
Anyway, so thank you guys for joining us today. Thank you, Craig. Thank you, Gibson. And we're really we're going to have fun today. We're going to talk about something that really is in Gibson's world, his world of church planting, because he is assistant director of the Cross Creek Network and recently joined. When did you come on staff here at Cross Creek?
In August of 25.
August of 25. So do you know where you are yet?
Yes, I've figured out the campus. Yeah. I know where my office is.
There you go.
Yeah. I've got the full orientation.
Getting your feet down.
Yeah, I'm new to Texas. Never lived in Texas.
Yeah,
and it's been an adjustment.
Yeah,
weather-wise,
yeah,
the air is a little sweeter. The sky's a little brighter. Isn't that right, Ben?
That's right. You've come home. So in the home you didn't know you had.
He's an Okie, so it's a little rough for him. Yeah. I mean, he's trying to figure that out. It's kind of like enemy territory in some ways.
You're good. Behind enemy lines.
That's right.
We are entering tornado season, so
you're
feel
glad
familiar.
You're on this side of the Red River.
Yeah, there was a bad one last night.
There sure was. So, yeah, massive one.
So today we're going to talk about the gap between church planting and disciple making. You know, I see this as there's two camps. There's even multiple conferences. You got conferences that are all disciple making. We need a whole nother one for church planting, which I understand. There needs to be different conversations and different maybe a specialization. But I think that's just it's kind of showing us where we are from a practical sense and philosophical ministry strategy, that they're completely two different things. And us at Cross Creek and Disciple First, we don't see it that way. And that's what we want to talk about today, is this gap that exists. Why does it exist? But really, how we see these things to really as working together and a part of the same process.
Yep.
And that's what I want our conversation to kind of go today. But first, I want us to get to know you, Gibson. I think you have a lot. You've been in ministry for a little bit of time. You have a lot of great experiences that I think our listeners could really learn from. So let's just give us kind of a quick flyby of who you are, where you've been in ministry, and how did you get here at the Cross Creek Network?
Yeah, grew up in Norman, Oklahoma, 2.5 hours north of here, and had a very irreligious family, not a Christian background. I used to get scolded because my teachers would say, we don't use that language in elementary school.
Yeah.
Through that, went into high school as kind of a immoral, atheistic, and had a pregnancy scare during my junior year of high school that put me in a position where I was considering an abortion. And through that, I began seeking God. A stranger came to my door, led me to faith in Christ.
Wow.
It's a story of how God just entered into my life and redeemed me from the lowest point. And from that point on, became evangelistic, converted, put my faith in Jesus, and went into ministry primarily as an evangelist. Mm-hmm. But in 2000, Craig and I met, and I needed somebody to disciple me, prayed for that Craig became a discipler, mentored me for 5 years, discipled me personally. And then I planted a church for Northwest for Craig. It was like church planting with training wheels.
It was. We had a North campus, but it was an upstart. And so it was all the church planting kind of pieces there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't have to carry the full weight.
Right.
It was like a babysitter and you were the parent.
Yeah.
You owned all the responsibility. I just had kind of the easy in and out.
Yeah.
But it set me on a trajectory toward church planting.
Yeah.
Went to Southern Seminary in Louisville from 05 to 07. And during that time, I worked with four church plants, three in Newfoundland, Canada, wow. St. Yeah. John's, Newfoundland, yeah. Two in Kentucky, and then went to work at a church plant in Philadelphia in 2008. That particular church, Riverside, had planted four other churches, okay. and itself was a church plant, started in 2000. And 4 years later, in 2011, I felt personally called to plant a church. And so I planted a church in the Philadelphia suburbs, Cross Creek.
Yep.
At that time, was First Colleyville.
Yep.
One of my first flights was to Craig and sat across a table from you and presented the plan. And First Colleyville was our primary sponsoring church, a huge support for us.
Yeah.
We sent multiple groups to Ignite and Flashpoint and disciple-making conferences.
Yeah.
But I pastored that church for 14 years.
Oh, wow.
Resigned last June, came to work at the network.
Yeah. We're so glad you did. It's been awesome to have you down the hall from us just to kind of pop in because, again, I guess the most exciting thing about for me personally is because I've known you for all that time. As you've come into our Connect group and presented about what you were doing, and then as we've worked, you've been a trainer for Disciple First. So I've got to see along the way and really get to know your heart of disciple making and church planting, of how they are one and the same in one conversation. So I'm so glad that you're on the team. It's been a real help for us personally, and I know for the network. I know Clay's, you know, just ecstatic that you're here to help just really take the network where it needs to go.
Yeah.
And so excited you're here with Cross Creek, but also here on the conversation today. So let's get right to it. This idea of there's a gap between church planting and disciple making. Hey, there's just two complete worlds. They don't overlap. This is one strategy. Why is there a gap, Craig? I'll let you kind of kick us off.
Yeah, I think that's a layered question, because we do see the gap. You know, I mean, Gibson, you did training for church planters up in the Philadelphia area, so you're very familiar with what the role of disciple making is in training church planters, and it's not that much. I mean, to NAM's credit, they do have a module in their training on disciple making, but it's one of what, 11 or 14 or something like that. So it's minimal in that regard. But really outside of that, you know, there are a lot of places that are just not talking about it that much. And I think even big picture there's a sense that we need to separate evangelism and discipleship. You know, we're not a big fan of that word, but that's the term that's being used out there. You see that at the denominational level, where you have your evangelism departments, your discipleship departments. So there is kind of this divide. You know, I remember reading a book by Carl Wilson. It's an old classic book on in the school of disciple making, and he traces it back to, you know, early. I think a Methodist pastor maybe that started talking about evangelism and discipleship and creating these words that began to tease those two apart. And I think when you get to the church growth movement, McGavern and those guys, they really saw discipleship as more inward focused, more self-reflective, more internal work. And then evangelism is all outward work, and they really thought that discipleship was a bad thing, really. I mean, if you turn inward, then you're not going to reach anybody, and it was almost anti-evangelistic. So really back in the 80s and 90s, you started to see this disparity between the two. And so I think that's just being played out.
Yeah.
Now, it may be running its course. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But, Gib, how have you seen that? In your experience, how have you seen this chasm between the two?
The clearest moment, Craig, in early 2000s, I was pursuing evangelism as a career, as a calling. And so having a disciple, being a disciple, having a discipleship background, I felt that tension, the pull between the two. Mm-hmm. I was outward focused, trying to share the gospel with as many people as possible during that stage. And it encapsulated, it was made clear to me in one incident. You may not remember this, but when we were in Oklahoma City, one kind of wintry cold night, there was a news story on about an infant that was left in a dumpster, Northwest 10th Street, Northwest 12th Street, somewhere in there. And a teenage girl had given birth secretly. No one knew that she was pregnant. She gave birth, didn't know what to do, put the infant in this dumpster. And a neighbor heard this crying in the middle of the night, went out there and rescued this child. It's a dramatic story, right. but for me, at the stage that I was in, I was so outward focused with evangelism, and I was wrestling with this on a regular basis. Is that right? Is there a responsibility to do more than just lead someone to faith in Christ? And that story solidified it for me that leading someone to Christ and then walking away is similar to exposing a child without nurturing that child and making sure that that new believer is discipled, yeah. is walked into faith and given some grounding and some footwork on how to walk with God.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a profound story, really. And I think you're exactly right. We, for some reason, we love to divide these two, you know, but Jesus never divided the two. You know, Jesus was the best disciple maker ever. And the greatest evangelist as far as having a heart for the lost and pursuing the lost. I came to seek and save the lost. And so I think we're missing something when we're trying to separate these two yeah. pieces, when really they're all one of the same process, which we'll get into in a moment.
And so what I'm hearing you, it's the same problem that we've talked about before of separating discipleship and evangelism. Church planting has kind of carried it on. And I think really yeah. the problem is going to be discipleship, like the term discipleship yeah. is probably yeah. the main problem. But how are they expressed? What is the current model of a church plant? What's in typically in the United States?
Yeah.
And again, we're speaking generally. We're not throwing any shade at anybody. We're right. just trying to state what would be the model of a traditional, typical church plant in the United States, right?
Yeah, I think model is the right thing. Gibb, you and I were talking about this the other day. Just unpack that for us, what the current model is. We're talking now in the United States, yep. primarily, not necessarily internationally, but and currently, yep. what's the predominant model?
And we're talking anecdotally. I don't have statistics and right. figures to back this up, but in my experience as a planter and someone who trained for the North American Mission Board in Philadelphia, and being around church planting for the last 26 years, by and large, the model is a large launch, gather a big crowd using any means necessary in a Sunday morning worship gathering. Mm-hmm. And then from that crowd, share the gospel, connect them to faith in Jesus. And then a next step might be put them in a group, some kind of a connect group or a Sunday school class or a home group or some kind of a Bible study. And then disciple making is a component that's 5, 6, 7 years down the road. It's not an essential ingredient to the first few years of a church plant is the way it felt or the way it seemed typically expressed in church planting. Yeah. That the priority was gather a crowd and get a Sunday morning worship gathering established. Mm-hmm. The second step might be to connect them in small groups or home groups.
Right. And of course, those are all the metrics that you're supposed to turn in, right? If you're a planter, right. you have to turn in this scorecard.
That's right. How many people attended your worship service? How many people were at an outreach gathering or those kind of things? How many people are in your connect groups?
How many did you baptize? How many times you share the gospel or hand out tracts or whatever?
That's right.
How was there on that metric? How many people did you disciple to multiply?
No, not in the first church I planted, not in the four that I worked with through seminary, not in the one I worked with in Philadelphia, and not in the one that I planted in Philadelphia until 2 or 3 years in. And then the metric was introduced. So there was a changing trend.
Yeah. Okay.
Why is that? Like, what perpetuates that model? Why is that seen as the way to move forward? What's the big, maybe the undercurrent to that in your opinion?
Well, here's the reality. Most planters are tied to a declining support model. Mm. And so their funding, there's a real window of opportunity for funding before your church is supposed to be autonomous and independent and able to support itself. And so guys run into a funding issue. And if you have a large crowd on a Sunday morning gathering, those are numbers that justify your existence. Yeah. Yeah. And if you said on these reports, you know, I discipled four guys this year, funding might dry up.
Yeah.
It's more difficult to, it takes longer. That's a major challenge. It takes longer. You don't see immediate results. And so it's difficult to put in the labor when you're not seeing immediate results.
So it's kind of that sense of urgency. Hey, we've got to prove that we're making an impact. These are the fast numbers that we can get, you know, or try to attain that are going to really keep the money flowing and the donors flowing long enough. Because again, disciple making, sometimes building relationships can be seen as always the slow way that's going to, and maybe not the flashy results that keep those in. That's what you're saying? It just kind of keeps.
Yes. And American evangelicalism tends to promote celebrity Christianity, and celebrity Christians, pastors, are the ones who have the big crowd.
Yeah.
And so that gets platformed so often that there is an maybe unspoken pressure for a church planter to arrive by having a large crowd.
Yeah.
And
to your point, not only is it the crowd important for getting support outside the church, the crowd's also important to sustain the church.
Oh yeah,
you know, long term. So there is the pressure to gather that crowd, so you have enough families that are going to be supporting and moving forward. So there is that. Not that money is the only driver, mm-hmm. but it is an important piece. Yeah. You know, I mean, if that dries up, you know, what are you going to do? And so I think all those things tend to move toward that. Now, you don't necessarily see that from an international perspective, because a lot of places where you're planting, you can't gather a large crowd. So the model shifts.
Yeah.
But in the United States, you know, Gibb and I were talking about it, it just seems like there is this understanding of what church is, what church should be in the U.S. Mm-hmm. that precipitates this model of gathering a large crowd and then kind of trickling in disciple making later down in the process.
You know, I'm curious. We work with more established church pastors, just with Disciple First. We do, you know, we are training and equipping with the network, but historically, you know, that's kind of our audience, and our ministry serves them. What we're seeing with that audience is that the majority of senior pastors have never been discipled.
Hmm.
Are you seeing, as you were in the world and training that world, are you seeing the same things with church planters? Do they have that same experience? Like, have they ever been personally discipled and really know what that looks like?
It's such a difficult word because it's so loaded. It mm-hmm. might mean something to you. It might mean something different to someone else. And so there are very few people who say, you know, discipling isn't important. Discipleship is not an important thing. Everybody has a value for discipleship. But I think the challenge is, how do you define that?
Yeah.
What do you mean by discipleship?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do I mean by discipleship? Yeah. It's a moving definition that I think it's always helpful to define your terms.
Yeah.
Let's do that right now. It's because again, we have this conversation all the time, and I get a little bit zealous about this. I think one of the largest things that's hindering the local church in North America is this educational mindset that leans more towards this discipleship word. It's all about more information. It's all the formation of the believer, not a strategy that how we would train people. You know, listeners kind of know what we're talking about, this Jesus model. But Craig, take an opportunity. Let's just get it on tape. What is the definition of disciple making in reference to discipleship? What's the distinctions?
Right. Yep.
Let's just get it.
Like you said, we've talked about this a lot before, but discipleship is a big bucket. I describe it like a big bucket, and you can kind of throw anything in there that is spiritual growth related, right? So a lot of people say, well, we preach sermons. That's discipleship, right? We do groups. That's discipleship. We do men's and women's Bible studies. We do prayer meetings. We do anything you want to, you can throw in that bucket. And that's why we don't like the term discipleship. Number one, it's not a biblical term. You don't find the term discipleship in the Bible. And also, it's so generalized that it really doesn't mean anything. And so we prefer the term disciple making in the sense that Jesus said, go and make disciples in Matthew 28. So this is a process by which you make a disciple.
Mm-hmm.
So we walk a church through defining what that disciple is, and then what is the process by which you make that disciple.
Yeah.
So that's why we like the term disciple making as opposed to discipleship. Now, all of a sudden, disciple making is very, very clear, right? Now we have a definition of a disciple. And now we have a clear process by which we're looking at the life of Jesus. We examine what did Jesus do? What was his strategy? We can see how he broke down into in a four-step process by which he took irreligious guys and moved them toward being reproducing, multiplying disciples. And so disciple making, in the sense, is the process by which you make a disciple, which that includes pre-salvation, how you're getting that person up to a point where they receive Christ, how they're connecting with other believers and they're developing relationally, and then how they are actually developed with the character and competencies of Christ and then are able to multiply that. And so we do see that, you know, around the world. We see that in the United States. I mean, that can happen. But unfortunately, I mean, I went to seminary. I, you know, did my doctoral work. None of that was really taught. And yet it's so clear in the scriptures. So really what we're trying to do through Disciple First and through the network is this, Gib, I liked how you said it the other day, just this intense gazing on the ministry of Jesus. Mm-hmm. How did he make disciples that multiplied and turned the world upside down?
All right. That's the distinction.
That
because
is the distinction.
It's not do come up with a definition or a picture, even if it's biblical, your definition of a disciple. No. What did Jesus mean when he commanded for us to go and make disciples of all nations? And how did he do it? So how do we go back, look at his life, look at his model, because he is our model for life and ministry. And Jesus was about building a movement. And how else are we going to perpetuate the church or even church planting other than a movement? So why don't we go back to the guy that did it best?
That's right. And we're to follow Jesus, right? We're not to follow our plans. Yeah. We're to match and align our ministries to the life of Jesus.
Yeah. And there was no ambiguity. When Jesus said, go and make disciples, the 11 apostles after the resurrection, at that place where he gave the Great Commission, they knew exactly what he meant when he said, make a disciple.
That's exactly right.
It wasn't just grab any spiritual growth tool and call it disciple. Right. They knew the process.
Yeah, you know, the modern definition of discipleship, like I said, is a big bucket, everything's thrown in there. But I think in general, it either follows in this idea of information. Okay, we're going to learn more things. We're going to consume more data, more information. We're going to go to do this Bible study and this Bible study and this Bible. I was talking to a guy the other day. He goes, yeah, I'm in five Bible studies. I'm like, why? Why? I mean, you need to be taking what you know and investing in other persons so they can multiply. Why are you in five Bible studies? So the information, or it's just hanging out. Mm-hmm. It's all relational. Hey, we're just going to hang out together. We're going to go to the ball game together. And I'm saying both of those aren't, but you need information and you need to hang out, but it's not just information. It's not just hanging out. It's investing in a person to help them accomplish, master these competencies that they can multiply their life. And it's the multiplication piece that gets lost, because in both these cases, they're more consumer minded. Okay, this is what I'm going to get, and that's going to help me, instead of saying, I'm just being prepared to multiply my life. And that's what gets eradicated, is this the essential ingredient. To your point, you can't have a movement without multiplication.
Yeah.
And we're removing this essential element of multiplication.
Yeah.
And what are you going to multiply? Well, you got to identify that disciple. You got to train them well and then show them how to multiply. Yeah.
And I want to put a pin in that, because we're going to come back. We're actually going to have Gibson. We're going to have you on for another episode where we're really going to take a deep dive into the way of Jesus. And so I want to put a pin in that. But I want to come back to, because what you're saying is there is a little bit of there's a transition in mindset. Hey, if you come up through seminary, you've kind of mentioned, you wrote a whole book about your story of coming to this realization that the Jesus model was the model that you should examine for the strategy of your church. But Gibson, I'm assuming somewhere along the way you came to that conviction as well. So you were in seminary, you've been trained in this world of church planting. How did you come to this conviction that there was a different way of planting a church?
Yeah, well, it starts in, I was a Bible student at a Bible college, Ouachita Baptist, in Arkadelphia, Arkansas.
It's the other OBU.
Yeah, it's a little OUA. It's a funny Ouachita, Ouachita.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, had a great experience there. I was a new believer, 2 to 3 years into my walk with God. And I was reading through Matthew, and I noticed in Matthew chapter 4, verse 23 through chapter 5, verse 2, this just little snippet of the ministry of Jesus where it described the crowds coming to him. And it lists all the places, the Decapolis and Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria. And I looked at, I flipped my Bible to the back and I opened it up and I looked at the map and I was like, that's a huge area that all these people are coming to see Jesus. And at some point I noticed, I think in chapter 5, verse 1, that he left the crowds and then he went higher up on a mountain. He became inaccessible to the crowds and he called his disciples to them. And there was a moment when I noticed it and it made a deep impact in me that Jesus left this enormous crowd. How counterintuitive is that? Mm-hmm. We want crowds. He intentionally left these crowds behind so that he could have a Sermon on the Mount is directed to the disciples. And so he is intentionally leaving the larger crowd ministry to invest in a few. And I'll tell you what, Ben, during that moment, as a new believer, my character was still struggling. I noticed that there were all these deficiencies in my life. Mm-hmm. I had aspirations to be more godly, but my sin nature was still had a deep impact, still does. Yeah. But at that moment, it was very noticeable. And so I began to long for someone to invest in me the way I saw Jesus investing in that. So I pulled out a list and I began to make a list of qualities and characteristics of someone that I was praying for that would disciple me. Hmm. And 18 months later, it was when I met Craig and he said, I'm praying for a guy to disciple. And I said, I'm praying for a guy to disciple me. And the Lord, by his divine providence, connected us in that moment. Yeah. And it was the answer to the question that I'd had those 2 years before. What does it mean to be discipled and to be invested? You want me to tell you how that fits to church planting?
Yeah, love it.
Well, so in 2000, when I planted the North Campus, the Training Wheels church plant, at that time, it was more of a large launch model. You gather the crowd. It was the same model that we had heard before. When I went to seminary, I worked with four or five other church plants, similar model. When I went to Philadelphia suburbs, similar thing, large launch model, gather a crowd, from the crowd, connect them. Disciple making wasn't present in that. And so at some point through all those experiences over a 12-year period, when I stopped and wrote the ministry plan for Ridgeline, I don't know if it was rebellious. I don't know what it was, Craig. Maybe you can
call it pioneering. That sounds better, doesn't it?
But I have a contrarian spirit. Sometimes, yeah, yeah. I mean,
take your own path.
Yeah, because if everybody else is doing it this way, and at that point I'd gotten so fed up with it, I thought, I'm going to do an experiment with this church plant. I'm going to see if I can plant a church using only a disciple-making model. Mm. We de-emphasized the Sunday morning gathering.
Yeah.
We emphasized a Wednesday night sort of disciple-making group. So we bought so many copies of One-on-One with God, and we had six learning groups, and we did disciple-making for 18 months with that group of people. No, Sunday morning, we met in 9 locations, under a tree in a park for 6 months, at a bounce house, birthday party room A and birthday party room B. My kids thought that was the greatest church ever.
Yeah, no doubt.
Drop them off for Sunday school at church, and they get to go bounce for an hour and a half while we did this disciple-making stuff. But we challenged the group at the end of that. The way this church gets planted is when you go 2 Timothy 2:2, right? The things you heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable men who will be able to teach others also. And so our mantra was four deep. I want you to go four deep. I've invested in you as the core team. Each one of you need to now go and invest in someone who will invest in someone who will invest in someone. And for the first 24 months of this church plant, the emphasis was on disciple making and multiplication. Our Sunday morning service it left a lot to be desired. There was very little inspiration. It's one guy on a guitar, me speaking, but it was not attractional, Craig, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And I think, too, it's probably your mindset was a little bit different, too, because, I mean, some people may say, but I really do want to have, a different type of Sunday morning experience, but then I also, I love what you're saying, and I want to integrate that. I think it goes back to it goes back to your intent as a leader. Where is your priority? Again, Jesus, he did speak to crowds. He did do that. But his intentional focus and his priority was on a few, 4 to 1. We see in the account, in the gospel accounts, that how his time was spent. So again, I think it's, you don't have to just strip everything and go bare bones. It's not, you know, again, that was your choice for your context. But I think maybe a skeptic, you know, if we're talking to a skeptic right here, well, what's the difference? I'm doing groups. I'm doing that. How would you address a skeptic, Craig? Like, what is the difference between a disciple making a church plant that's planted with a disciple making focus in every other church plant? What are some practical things?
Yeah, I just think practically a church plant that has a disciple making focus, first, number one, has disciple making on the radar from the jump, mm-hmm. right? They're not just only gathering a crowd and trying to move. We're not saying that that's necessarily inherently wrong,
yeah.
but we're just saying what's wrong is their disciple making is missing. It's not even on the radar from the beginning. Right. So I would say it's on the radar from the beginning, and that you have a clear definition of a disciple that you're trying to make, and you have a clear pathway of what that looks like. Okay. It's really that simple. I mean, we're not trying to make it harder than what it should be, but just saying, okay, do you have a clear definition, and do you have a process, a pathway for that? And that pathway is going to guide you into the programs and into the offerings that you have as a church. So there's a place to play in the morning gathering. There's a mm-hmm. place to play in groups. There's a place for one-on-one or small group investment yeah. to multiply, right? There's a place for all that. So we're not just saying disciple making is only when the guy gets together with two other guys at the coffee shop and they go through the book, right? That's an integral piece of it that's often missing. Right. But it's not just that. It's reaching that person, you know, so there it includes evangelism, it includes Sunday morning gathering, it includes community in the church, it includes this personal investment and training, and includes multiplication. So it's going to have all that.
That's right.
Right. A holistic approach. Yeah. And so what was missing, what Gibson's articulating, is there are pieces that would look the same. Yeah. Right. But what was missing was the purpose for it all.
Yeah.
The purpose isn't just to have a crowd. The purpose is we're trying to move people down a pathway that results in them growing and them multiplying their life. Yeah. Right.
So, Craig, what I learned during that experiment was that disciple making needs to be a key component, a primary function in church planting, not an add-on that comes right. later. Not at the expense of what other things that make a church.
Right.
What other things? You can't de-emphasize the Sunday morning worship gathering for too long.
Right.
But the conviction started with where you're seeing disciples made and multiplied, yep. a church will inevitably result.
Right.
The byproduct of disciple making is a church.
Right.
And then it can flourish in all those other ways.
I love how you said that, Gib, because this is why we're moving into the church planting side, because for years it was just, we're just going to make disciples, and we don't normally do that in the context of an established church. But what we said is, you know, the end result of church, of disciple making, is church planting.
That's
you look
right.
at the book of Acts, they're not just only discipling people, they're producing churches, they're planting churches that will multiply and plant churches. Look at the book of Ephesus. I mean, the church of Ephesus, most people believe that it was Ephesus that planted all the other churches that we read in Revelation 1 through 3. So there was some movement of God, they were gathering together, there was investment in teaching and community and all those wonderful things, but there was training of people that went out to multiply, and you could see that. And I think that is the model that we're missing. Most pastors don't want to plant churches because we're trying to keep the people that we have, right? And we're clutching on to people because we can't lose anybody. And so this scarcity mindset, this kind of protective mindset, and a lack of disciple-making mindset actually keeps us from multiplying, which is how we reach the world and how we reach our state and our country. And so this is why you're seeing the church is declining, because we missed the point of what Jesus wanted us to do.
Yeah, it's this idea of a movement, and there are stages of a movement. There's a life cycle of movements. Look at the life of Jesus as the beginning of that movement, and so put that inside of a local church. Well, you're just going to start discipling. I mean, how did you and Glenn start a movement here at Cross Creek Church. You started discipling four or five guys each.
That's right.
Okay, so, and then, but over time, that movement grows. Just like, just as we see moving out of the Gospels into the book of Acts, you see that movement go on, and now all of a sudden you have multiple churches. And I, that's where I land with this, is that church planting is a byproduct of a disciple-making mindset, movement, church, however you want to say that.
And say it another way, the lack of church planting is a lack of a disciple-making mindset. Yeah. So what we were told in the church growth movement is church planting is bad. I mean, no, that disciple-making is bad, and it will hinder church planting. Now we're saying actually the opposite is true. What's hindering church planting is a lack of a multiplying mindset, which comes from a disciple-making perspective. Yeah.
What struggled in the church planting boom of the 1990s, the early 2000s, the reason why so many guys were being trained, sent out, and the failure rate was high, Craig.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Some of those 5, 6, 7 out of 10 guys in the early 2000s, late 1900s. Doesn't that make me sound old?
Hey, I was right there with you. So
way back in the 1900s.
Yeah, way back.
At the end of the 20th century. Yeah. Well, during that time, it was... Why did I start to see discipleship popping up in training after 2010 when I was training in the Philadelphia suburbs, all the church planters for the North American Mission Board for Philadelphia and South or Pennsylvania, South Jersey? Why was there now an emphasis on disciple making? Because I think what they found was that assessments improved. So choosing the right guy, training that guy in the right way, but also churches, we wanted churches that the survival rate to increase.
Yeah, that's right.
And the survival rate increases as you disciple people.
Right.
It was a key component to the thriving and the sustainability of a church. We want an accessible church to every community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gospel accessibility comes through a church that's rooted and established and making disciples. Yeah. And everybody should have access to a church like that. Disciple making was a component that ensured its longevity.
Well, when you said survival, it took me back to the baby in the dumpster, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That we got to have that nurturing piece to sustain not just individuals, but churches as well.
Yeah. So along the way, you know, again, I know that's who you are now. You say that right now with pure conviction. I can feel it in the room when you say that. But along the journey, I mean, you were there for 14 years. Was there ever a time you're like, hey, I need to take an escape. I need to go this easier route. There's an easier way. And was there ever a temptation to do that?
Yeah, Ben. I mean, I make mistakes. I make so many mistakes. I shouldn't have planted the way I planted, putting everything on a disciple-making model.
Yeah.
I should have emphasized the Sunday morning worship. That's pretty anti-biblical to, you know. I should have done things in a better way. Yeah. If I could redo it, I would redo it. But along the way, because I overemphasized disciple-making for the first 3 to 4 years, somewhere along the fourth, fifth year when my funding was running out, we started to emphasize the Sunday morning worship gathering. And then disciple-making, to be honest, lost a bit of focus from me, the planter, for a good 4 year period. Yeah. I didn't do any in personal investing in people.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't need to be all gas or, you know, hot and cold, hot and cold. It would have been better had I just planted it in a balanced way from the beginning. So I definitely learned that disciple making is a key component along the way with other components of a church plant.
So, you know, right now in your role, so as your role at Cross Creek Network, you're the assistant director, and, you know, Cross Creek Network has plants and partners all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing, you know, with Disciple First, we work with a lot of church movements, not just here in the United States. And I think there's a lesson to be learned. We're about to go to Nepal. We're gonna be training leaders there. And there's never a question about when we start talking about a movement, multiplying disciples, you don't get the kickback from an international context in that. Like, they're just like, well, yeah, how else would we do this? Number one, why do you think that is?
Well, I think American Christian subculture has almost made this our paradigm, that you go to church on Sunday morning at a building and church is a location, not a people. And the activities of the church happen mm-hmm. at a particular day, a particular time of the week. Where in international context, the church gathers a lot more organically,
yeah.
a lot more purposefully. So in some ways, you've seen this in pre-Christian cultures and yeah. In Europe and in England and in other places where there's a more formalized big church that you go to and it's much more organizational
yeah.
and a lot less missional.
Yeah.
And so I think we're on the verge of that. We see that in our post-Christian American culture, that there's still the residue of that.
Yeah.
That there is a go-to-church mentality, not be-the-church type of mentality that believers carry into it. So it's in some ways, you're almost having to have new wine and new wineskins. A church plant gives you the opportunity
yeah,
to do that.
Yeah.
You can reset everything, and there are no expectations. Yeah. I mean, you know, and sometimes you're meeting in bars and nightclubs yeah. and all kinds of weird places that just immediately shatter the paradigm of, I go to a church building on Sunday morning.
Yeah. You know, I think we were having a conversation with one of the church plants up in Montana. We had one of our coaches that's on staff here, Cameron, who's kind of been on our podcast and stuff before, but he's coaching them as a part of doing some work with you guys and just really helps supporting that church plant. And that was his comment. He's talking about, well, the pathway, you know, mission alignment to a pathway, to a definition, to all these things. He's like, it's actually so much more fun to work with a church plant sometimes than because there's so less things you have to cut off to really start making some headway forward, you know, because we coach a lot of churches, you know, this week working, you know, Cam was on a call with me, I was on another call, and it's really all this, how do we integrate this pathway, this definition into a local church? With an established church, that's a lot more difficult.
It's so much more difficult. You have to deconstruct, and I know that's a confusing word sometimes, but you almost have to take things apart when you're in an established church.
Yeah.
Things have to go to make room for a new emphasis. And then there's resistance to that. We merged. So the church I planted merged with an older Mennonite church. Mm-hmm. And the blending of a church plant that had been meeting in a dozen different locations over 7 years with an established church had its challenges. There was a library there that had been there for a long time, yeah. and it took a couple of years before the library ministry was, you know, we changed that area of the building. And changing ministries in a established church takes a lot longer.
Yeah.
It's just much faster to start things the way you want them to be in a church plant.
So with the network, when you're going in, you're helping, you know, some of these guys we're sending out, some of these pastors we're, you know,
adopting,
you're helping
adopting
or doing assessment, like meeting them in assessment and helping them plant.
Yep.
How are you helping them close this gap? Because again, we started the conversation, hey, there's a gap between church planting. So I'm sure they've been exposed to that. They have this call to church planting. So I'm assuming they've been exposed to that idea before. How are you kind of redirecting them and closing that gap on these new plants with the Cross Creek Network?
Yeah, the guys that were most easily adopting into the network. We're not sending them out of Cross Creek Church, but many of them were just adopting midstream, mid-plant,
yep.
mid-process. The guys that are most easily attracted to it are the guys who already have a disciple-making conviction.
Yep. So you're doing that to assessment. Like you're starting
yes.
with a like-minded, planter. That's part of it.
Yeah. So not everybody wants to be a part of the Cross Creek Network. It is a unique group of people who have this conviction that Jesus' strategy for making disciples was a primary ministry activity. And that carries over into their church plant. So that person, now not all the planters in the network have that conviction.
Yeah.
So many of them were helping them develop that conviction.
Mm-hmm. Along the way.
And so that's a lot of the work too, is helping them see Jesus' strategy in disciple making and then releasing them to go and make disciples.
Yeah. And then, you know, Craig, we're talking about closing this gap in talking about this. And so as we close this gap of disciple making and church planting, you know, Gibson's working through the network. We're trying to redirect, you know, working with some of the pastors in the network as well, helping unpack Jesus' model. you know, talk real quickly about this kind of a new initiative with Cross Creek, that the Nine Cities Initiative,
yeah,
where you're going to plant in the nine cities, including Colleyville, but all touch. So here locally, yeah, and those pastors, a lot of them, they're going to come from right here. So that's another way you're building a system in this church of producing people that are bought in and planters that are going to go from out of this church into these nine cities.
Right. Yeah. We really wrestled with how can we multiply better as a church. Mm-hmm. We were seeing multiplication through our network in a lot of different ways, but we struggled with what does that look like. And of course, the model that's normal is you just go to the fastest growing area, yeah, and try to be the first one there. It's kind of like the gold rush, right? You try to plant your flag there first and harvest all the people that are coming in. And I'm not saying that's a wrong thing, but for us, it really didn't make sense. We're not going to have many families that were going to want to move out that far. There were a lot of other factors involved. We had done a lot of work in our local communities, which included these cities. These nine cities are really Colleyville and all eight contiguous cities that touch Colleyville, yep, on either side. And so we just felt like God gave us this initiative that, hey, we want to plant a church in every one of, yep, these neighboring communities. And so we're about to launch that this next year. It will be our first church, yep, plant in that area, and we hope the first of eight more, you know, that will do that. So we're excited about it, but it's really forcing us to say, how are we raising up these, yep, leaders, and how are we, you know, and again, just casting the vision about it. We're not just about planting, you know, in faraway places. We're also to make disciples right here.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some people that might argue, well, gosh, you know, there are a lot of churches around here, and that is true. You know, we got a lot of churches. Most of them are not very healthy, right? And very, very few have any kind of disciple-making, multiplying, yeah, mindset. So we're trying to plant disciple-making, multiplying churches.
Yeah.
And I think that's the distinctive. In fact, we did a pretty intensive demographic study, and what would seem to be a very churched area was very unchurched. Isn't that right, Gibson?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I dove into the demographics, two different reports, and have spent a lot of time laboring over them. But yeah, but the short story is that within a 20-minute drive of here, as many as 70% of the population doesn't attend a church anywhere.
Yeah.
Lending toward an unbelieving or at least a religiously skeptical,
right,
skeptical of organized religion, churches, that kind of thing. But certainly there's unbelief in that number.
Right.
7 out of 10 people in an area within 20 minutes of this location.
In the Bible Belt.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that term needs to go away.
Yeah,
it's just no longer.
Yeah.
It's no longer, right, assumed that we are in a place where Christianity, and that's the message of the gospel, right?
Right, right.
It's an offensive message. It's a difficult, yeah, message of Jesus to carry your cross and, yeah, to follow him.
I'm preaching on that on Sunday.
Oh. So no wonder it is a, yeah, increasingly lost,
yeah, yeah,
community around us. So to plant new churches, new wineskin and new wine and new wineskins,
yeah,
with an already baked in disciple making.
Right.
I mean, the guys that are raising up from this church,
right,
already have this.
They already have it. They already have it.
You don't have to teach them.
No, I don't have to try to get them to want it. They already want it.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. So that's one of the things we're doing as a church to try to take new ground.
Yeah.
And I would just encourage pastors that are listening to this today, what are you doing to try to take new ground? What are you doing to not only embrace disciple making within your own church, within you as a person and your own church, yeah, but also how are you multiplying your church? You know, your communities neighbor other communities, mm-hmm, unless you're in a rural setting.
Yeah.
You've got opportunity there. And, yeah, so how can you, multiply in your area?
Yeah. And I just, as we kind of wrap it up and put a bow on this one, on this conversation, I just love the idea of kind of a multi-front of closing the gap. Like your heart is to see disciple-making churches exist, planted, leaders raised up, but we're operating on a multi-front with Disciple First. We're really working with established churches,
mm-hmm,
and how do we continue to put that out there with the network? You're going to planters that are already in the field, and how do you help them kind of steer towards that? But also, how do we plant model churches then to continue to point back to and say, hey, this can be different. It can be, this is possible.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited about the Nine Cities Initiative because it's really going to be proof of, hey, here we are producing disciples that are going and loving this community. Mm-hmm. And the overflow of that is going to be local churches. And some of those aren't going to look like, it's not, no. We're not talking a multi-site strategy.
Right.
We're talking about really serving the community that's around us.
That's right.
And doing that by raising up disciples of Jesus who are passionate about serving other people.
Yeah.
It's not just another church growth multi-site strategy that you're executing.
Right.
It's really this, again, it goes back to, this is an overflow of this, of just this heart of a disciple-making movement here at the church, and we just want to continue to have that spread internationally, across the United States, and right here at home.
Yeah.
And so thank you guys for talking about it. I think it's a worthy conversation because I really do. You take these church planters, they have all the zeal, they're pioneers, they're going to conquer. And then sometimes it's kind of unfortunate that they're met with so much disappointment because I just see that they're chasing after the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And just how can we be a better model to point them back to Jesus? And that's what you guys really spend a lot of time thinking and working towards. And I really appreciate what y'all do in that.
And, you know, Ben, I'll just say that if there's a church planter listening and what we're saying resonates with you, then maybe being a part of the brotherhood of our Cross Creek network, you know, maybe that's the next step for you.
Definitely.
So contact Gibb, contact Clay, contact, you know, the guys at the network, because we love to embrace and encourage each other in these things.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you for being on, Gibson.
Glad to be here.
You as a listener and viewer, thank you so much for being on this podcast today and listening in. We hope it was encouraging to you. Like Craig said, hey, we want you to reach out to if you want to know more about the Cross Creek Network. We'll have all that information for you in the show notes. Thank you for listening.